This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
The World Health Organization is warning that we may be on the cusp of a post-antibiotic era where people die of infectious diseases that are currently treatable. Resistance to antibiotics is creating a major global health threat. Professor Peter Collingham is a professor and physician in infectious diseases at the Australian National University. I think I've caught him on his rounds, have I, this morning, Peter?
Yeah, I'm currently at Canberra Hospital looking at patients.
Okay. Can you explain firstly what's meant by the term superbugs? Because, you know, it just sounds like bugs that are super strong, but this is really more about resistance to antibiotics, isn't it?
Yeah, what superbugs means is really these bacteria have got a bulletproof vest on them so that when we fire antibiotics at them, they bounce off. Usually they're not necessarily stronger than the, you know, the standard one, or but on occasion they can be because they can have things called toxins, which then give them that ability to also, you know, cause more disease as well.
Okay.
But generally the big thing about them is the antibiotics don't work. They really basically bounce off the protection they're put on.
And this is just because resistance has built up over time?
Yes, it's because, you know, when antibiotics were first put into use really in the early 50s, the vast majority of bacteria were sensitive to the antibiotics we had available and subsequently available. But what happens with time, because bacteria are so good at, you know, like evolving to meet the situation, is they either mutate and develop resistance or more likely pick up resistance from somewhere else. And then that particular bacteria that's resistant gets an advantage when you put antibiotics into the area. It gets in high numbers and then spreads to other people or to other animals or through the environment via water and food to other people.
Yeah, I guess you're kind of giving it an unfair advantage, aren't you, when you wipe out all the others?
Well, we'll give it an unfair advantage, firstly, because there's more bacteria in sort of my body and your body than there ever have been people on Earth, and they can multiply every 15 minutes, and they have a lot of promiscuous sex with each other, so they genetically, you know, they change their genetic material from bacteria to bacteria very easily. So,
yeah, so what are the risks for public health if bacteria continue to develop resistance at the rate that they are now?
Well, the real problem, and we're lucky in Australia, we have much lower resistance rates than, for instance, India and China. In a lot of those countries, there's not the cusp of untreatable infections. Half the infections, such as E. coli, are, for practical purposes, untreatable already. So, you know, in a lot of areas of the world, this isn't just theoretical, this is real. But in Australia, the problem is if we get a lot of resistance, you get more deaths and suffering. Basically, if you look back in the 1920s and 30s before we had antibiotics, if you had golden staph in your blood, there was an 80% chance that you would not survive more than 30 days. And a common bug called E. coli, if in Europe they did a good study that showed if you had what we call an ESBL, which is one resistant to all the deoxyribonucleases or third-generation cephalosporins, then that actually meant you had a 3 times higher death rate if the bug was in your blood. And if you did survive, you were in hospital on average 5 to 7 days longer than people who had the same bug but one that would respond to antibiotics. So basically it causes more death and it causes more destruction. And these are required in the community now as equally as hospitals, which is a real problem because we're spreading it through the community worldwide and we need to do lots of things to interfere with that.
Well, let's get on to that. What can we do firstly as individuals to help combat this problem?
Well, as individuals, we should take what we can to not pick up infections in the first place, and that's everything from good hygiene, alcoholic hand rubs if you're in high risk situations, and particularly when we travel, making sure the food we eat is effectively doesn't have anything that can cause travelers diarrhea, but more importantly, also these resistant bugs, and that means eating hot food, drinking good quality water, meaning boiled water or one from a reputable dealer, and essentially not having salads and all those things that would have bugs on them that might be viable. Then the other thing we can do as individuals is question whether we need antibiotics. I mean, every time we have antibiotics, it increases our risk of either developing a resistance bug or more likely having one and having it in higher numbers because we've got it from somewhere else. And basically, in Australia, we use 3 times as many antibiotics as, for instance, the Netherlands does. So there's a lot we can do to decrease our antibiotic use without compromising our health, because a lot of antibiotics are given for viral upper respiratory tract infections where we don't get anything from the antibiotic except side effects in the form of rashes and diarrhea, or we help spread then antibiotic resistant bacteria and keep them not only in ourselves but run the risk of spreading it to those around us. That's what we can do from an individual point of view, take good care with what goes in our mouth, where we are. I think not having surgery in overseas hospitals is also a good idea because that's fine if everything goes without according to plan, but about 5% to 10% of people probably pick up infections, and then it's very likely to be a very difficult infection.
So you're saying
impossible to treat.
I should cancel that the facelift in Thailand that I had booked in.
Well, basically, my view is that yes, some people are marketing these, but there is very big risks if something goes wrong that you'll have a very difficult to treat infection, and or impossible to treat, because we've actually seen that here with people who've been transferred back after having that sort of surgery done. So, you know, it is a problem, and while it may be cheaper for a lot of people, if something goes wrong, both for the individual and the community, we suffer the consequences, not only in the cost, but the cost of antibiotic resistance and those bugs spreading to other people in our community.
It sounds like it's also, I guess, one of those issues that maybe has been neglected because of its global nature. You know, it really requires some international cooperation. So how can we move forward on this on a larger scale?
Well, I think we need to do everything we can within this country, and there's more we can do both with surveillance and having better control. But I think basically this has to be done internationally, which is why WHO and people are so important. We need to have clean water for everyone. That sounds basic, but if we had clean water in developing countries, we would probably halve the resistance rates there very quickly without, you know, doing much more. We do need new antibiotics developed as well, and the problem with that at the moment, most pharmaceutical companies aren't in it because there's not a return to them, because they want to produce a lot of drug and use a lot of it, and that's the antithesis of what we need for antibiotic resistance. We need to use less, and we use it sparingly. So we need a different business model, how we can get companies back into researching and developing antibiotics, because we'll always need new ones because resistance is inevitable. But we can do a lot to slow down the spread and the development of that, and that's everything from not using 3/4 of the world's antibiotics in food animals to make them grow faster. We can raise animals without antibiotics, and the problem with that is it gets in the water supply, the resistant bacteria, and in the food that's produced.
So do you think there should be a ban on using antibiotics in food production like that?
Well, my own personal view is there's certain antibiotics that are last line for people that should not be allowed to be used in food animals. Sure. Third generation cephalosporins, drugs like carbapenems, fluoroquinolones, they should not be allowed to be used at all, and we should not be allowed to use antibiotics routinely in feed, in water, as either growth promotion or what they call preventative therapy, because if you have to use continuous antibiotics, after a while they don't even work. But secondly, it shows there's a problem with the way you're raising animals, because resistance is inevitable. So you have to find less crowded ways of getting animals together. And it's not as that can't be done. It's been done in countries like Denmark. It's been done in even a lot of places like the US. And to a large degree, we do that in Australia. If you look at our cattle, the vast majority of our cattle are open pasture cows that do not get antibiotics. It's only when you put them in cattle feedlots, put them together, crowd them together, that's when they get sickness and you need something. So it's not that you can't do it. It just requires a change in the way we use animals, and we've got to be very careful about factory farming and that how we do that.
Well, it sounds good for the animals as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think this will be a win-win for animals, and it can be done without huge increase in costs and still produce all the food we need.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for giving us some ideas.
Okay.
That's Professor Peter Collingham. He's a professor in infectious diseases at the Australian National University.